大康自然健康中心成立于1987年，率先将自然疗法、同类疗法同埋碗肠水疗引进香港。我哋提供各项整全性治疗方式，排除体内毒素，增强自身免疫系统，一切尽在大康自然健康中心。电话25773798，网址www.naturalhealing.com.hk。
以下节目内容纯属主持及嘉宾个人意见，与本台立场无关。
In our last episode, I invited Jeanette to talk about her cancer, how she got it, and what is her opinion on cancer survival. You know, Jeanette wrote a book.Wrote two books, in fact, about her experience, and recently she released a full documentary film. And before we listen to her description of those works, well, I think most of us are most anxious to know what you did to survive your cancer. What happened?
Well, physically, basically, once I'd made the choice not to go with the allopathic treatment, but rather to go with holistic therapy, I was lucky enough to have a friend who is also a naturopathic physician, and he already had a lot of patients that he was helping with various different holistic therapies. And so I approached him and let him know what the diagnosis was and what did he think that we could, you know, come up with a plan. And he definitely was very positive about that. And he came up with a plan, what he called our cocktail of various different nutrients that I was having intravenously. So I would go to his clinic every day for 3 months and have, it usually took about 3 hours to get the nutrients in. And the reason for doing it that way intravenously was because I literally couldn't get enough from just eating the food. And one of the other things I did at the same time was I was juicing a lot. So, and that for the same reason, to get more of the nutrients by juicing than you would if you were eating the actual food. You just can't eat that much. So he developed a regimen, if you like, or protocol of those therapies. And along with that, there were other things that we did as well. He also gave me some... within that cocktail was an element that helped to reduce toxins, and he also did some ozone treatment, which is basically getting more oxygen into the blood. And the form that we used there was to take some of my own blood and pass it through an ozone machine, which basically oxygenates the blood and give that my own blood back again in a fully oxygenized form, so that I had more oxygen, you know, coursing through the body. And then there were other parts of that regimen whereby certain foods I no longer ate because they were high in sodium, one of which is celery, because it's very, very high in sodium, so I eliminated that. and there were a lot of other things that he recommended that I did not eat, which I already was not eating, such as all kinds of processed foods, all kinds of high sugar, high salt, high fat foods, none of which I eat anyway. But you know, those were, he developed this whole list of things to have and not to have in the way of actually consuming foods. And then we incorporated some practices, such as yoga, meditation, conscious breathing, so actually breathing, you know, being more conscious of the way you breathe, so deep breathing exercises, and various other ways of putting my emotional state in the right state, in a positive state at the same time. So my recommendation for people is, and it's basically in my book as well, is to, wherever they happen to be, wherever they're located, is to try and find a holistic practitioner who can come up with a plan of action for them in a similar manner. My naturopathic physician did not tell me to go raw or to, you know, raw vegan. But basically, by the lists of do's and don'ts, that is exactly what he told me. So, in other words, eliminate everything that's negative to the body and increase everything that's positive, and that's fruit and vegetables. So, at the time, it wasn't such a big or well-known movement, the raw and or vegan movement, which it is as it is today. But really, it was already well known. I mean, for centuries, we've been told, especially by our grandmothers, to eat your fruit and vegetables. And, you know, there's a reason for that, and that's to get the nutrients that you need for the body to keep you in a good state of health. So it just makes sense that if you've got a compromised situation with your health, that you do more of it. So that's pretty much what I did. So for 6 months after my diagnosis, during that 6 months that I was told I had left to live, I did everything I could, going to the clinic and having those holistic therapies every day. And he was monitoring it at the same time, so you really need to find someone that can do that and just see what's, you know, what's happening, so that it can be adjusted accordingly, different measures of the different nutrients. Spending time alone is also quite something that I would recommend, and, you know, appreciating self and self-worth and self-value. So, you know, at the very least, 15 minutes somewhere in a safe, you know, favorite place, just being there by yourself, doing absolutely nothing but being with yourself is quite crucial, I think. And a lot of the combination of all those different things is, I believe, what achieved, you know, my cure. It wasn't one thing in particular, it was a combination, and making the connection between all of those things as a whole. And I think that's what you know, all your lifestyle choices, your conscious lifestyle choices, do the same thing. So we can continue to live, you know, in a very conscious way by bringing in all those different aspects towards that.
I think from what you describe, you are very fortunate to have all these elements ready for you, including that doctor. But mm-hmm. I think this is something well beyond our means at this part of the world, and not to mention mainland China. We don't get many holistic doctors. Anyway, our naturopaths, I've never heard of any one of them sympathizing with a raw diet, mm-hmm. put it this way. Mm-hmm. They all got their own gadgets and convictions, and many of them are meat eaters anyway. They don't do fasting or meditation, so they, these are the things they won't recommend. Mm-hmm. Even if they do, they are not in a position to help you. You see?
Yes.
Now,
yeah.
So we have to do without. Well, to have what you call protocol from a professional,
mm-hmm.
is a dream here. at this moment. Of course, I hope that 10 years from now, I will get something like this.
Mm-hmm.
But at this moment, well, we have to forget about that. So people have to survive on their own, designing, well, their own thing,
mm-hmm.
In terms of diet. And one curious thing you mentioned was that doctor tried very hard to improve your emotional side. Well, what exactly did he do to you in terms of emotion enhancement?
He spent time with me. So when I was sitting there with this intravenous going on, and it takes as long as your body takes, you know, for it to be taken into the bloodstream. So some days it was 2 hours and some days it was 3 hours. So during that time, you're just sitting there. And so he spent time with all of his patients, came in and talked, and you know, it was like counseling for some, and just, you know, being there as a support person as well. But I can remember many times being, you know, I would go through say 3 hours, and at the end, when it was all done, and we'd look at results, and maybe they weren't quite as good as we would have hoped, and you know, and I would get emotionally upset, I guess. He would come and sit down beside me and put his arm around me and just let me cry. And it was, you know, I don't know of any doctor that will do that in the, you know, in the allopathic medical side of things, because they're not trained to be, you know, sympathetic or compassionate or even kind in some ways. Whereas, you know, this particular physician that I had was certainly that kind of a person. He was extremely kind and compassionate. And given, as you were saying, you know, it may not be possible to find somebody like that here in the circumstances here in Hong Kong and China, the best solution then is to take responsibility or take... I mean, basically, do it yourself. It's a do-it-yourself situation here. I can see that the most compassionate or kind person that you could find would be yourself. So, therefore, be kind to yourself and give yourself as much help as you can. And as we've spoken before, like, apart from that actual protocol of therapies that I did, if I hadn't done all of that, if I had been in the situation that most people are here, I would make as many changes as I could or that were necessary to make to eat as cleanly and purely nutrient-laden foods that I can get here. Incorporate juicing to be able to get more of the nutrients than if you were to eat them, and do make all those choices with regard to environmental exposure to various different chemicals or anything else that might increase the toxic load. For instance, if you're living in an area that is, you know, highly toxic or very polluted, you might want to look at going away for a while. You know, maybe you've got relatives, you know, out of the town, out of the city, you could go and stay with, or look at, you know, different options like that where you can get yourself into a cleaner environment. Because certainly anyone can clean up their own environment with regard to using no chemical products at all. None of that's necessary, especially for cleaning. If you're eating 100% raw, vegan, plant-based food, you don't need all these detergents and things like that, because you don't have any fat or bacteria in, you know, that you need to deal with. So by going especially raw, plant-based, you can eliminate a lot of those situations by not needing any of those things. One thing for women would be to look at cosmetics and make sure that if you really think that you need to wear cosmetics, that it's that you look towards getting or using those that are plant-based, vegan, without any chemicals in them, that they're using, you know, cold press practices, that type of thing. Otherwise, you know, look for the beauty will come from within. And if you become really healthy, at which people will if they clean up their diet and their lifestyle, then you don't need to paint a face to find the beauty. The beauty will come from within, and people will, you know, we have so many friends who are raw vegan, fruitarian, etc., who just glow with beauty. And that's one thing that I think is quite important. A lot of people spend a lot of time changing themselves into somebody else with the help of, you know, chemicals and things. Looking at making those choices, if the best you can do is to change your diet to a lot of raw fruit and vegetables, get a juicer somehow so that you can juice them, a blender so you can blend and make smoothies, then, you know, that's the best you can do, and it's going to be 100% better than what you might be doing now. So anything you can do in that direction is going to be 100% the best you can do. And I think in whatever situation we are in, that's what we're worth. So everybody's, you know, worth 100% the best, and, you know, strive for that. And I think perhaps we don't necessarily need to have the help of, you know, other physicians that may or may not be available. Maybe it's possible to actually do it on your own, just by thinking more consciously about what, you know, the decisions that we have to make.
Mm. Now we know that curing one's cancer is a long process of vigorous detoxing.
Yes.
And during a detoxing process, people typically experience all kinds of effects, responses. Did you have any, you know, fever or vomiting or you know, dizzying or pains or any of that kind, or emotional outburst?
For me, probably the most obvious was I would sometimes feel I had less energy, and I've never had a headache in my life, so I didn't have any of those. My lifestyle had been pretty clean, pretty healthy, just, you know, the only difference really was that it was cooked food and not, rather than not. So I didn't really have that many, but most people do experience a great deal. One of the things that I should mention is that for anybody who has been eating meat especially, or any kind of animal products, but especially actual red meat, is it when they stop eating that, they will experience certain withdrawal symptoms, but also they experience what they've ingested from that meat. And what a lot of people have told me, you know, that I've helped to go on various programs, is that they experience a great deal of anger and some anxiety, and some is sort of not, well, bordering on hatred. So they're saying, well, you know, I'm eating all this great fruit and vegetables and I just feel so angry, and or I wake up feeling, you know, anxious. What they don't realize is that that's a detox they're actually eliminating through detox.
That's from the beef.
What they've taken from the animals. That's right. So when you think what's happening with the animals when they're going to slaughter, they go through a huge amount of anxiety just because they're being placed in a situation that they weren't in before. Just that's the first thing. Secondly, they start to realize that this is a really bad situation. And thirdly, they really are convinced that they're going to die horrendously because they're actually watching their brothers and sisters going through the process in front of them, because they're all lined up and go into the slaughterhouse and they start to see, hear, and smell this terrible thing that's going to happen to them. So the amount of anxiety and, in some cases, anger, and then hatred and betrayal, all of those have a chemical reaction in the body and in the tissue of the meat that we then turn around, we as humans turn around and eat. We take that on. So when we stop eating it, the body then detoxes it. So it takes time. It depends on how many years you've been eating these kinds of things that you stop eating for the body to eliminate it. And it may be in the form of anger, or it may be in the form of a headache. It just depends on how it's being stored in the body for all those years. So it can be uncomfortable, but what I would tell my clients that were on our lifestyle programs was, every time you have a what you might consider an uncomfortable or a negative experience, it's a response from the body in the form of detox, and you should rejoice in it. It means that you're getting rid of a certain amount of that detox, you know, of that toxic level that you've had, and that's all good. And each time you some is removed, you get further towards health. So it's a bit of a roller coaster ride. You know, sometimes you feel down and sometimes you feel really great. As soon as you start to feel really good, oh, I've been on raw vegan, you know, plant-based food for 2 weeks and I'm just feeling fantastic, and then the next day, oh, I feel awful, I don't know about this. It's because as soon as you start to feel good, you're in a state where the body can actually let go a little bit more of that toxic load, and then you won't feel so good again. So it's like a roller coaster ride that goes on, and people get various different levels, or will experience different levels depending on their own life. But the thing to remember throughout the whole thing is, you're worth it. You're worth it. So keep going, keep going. Go through it, you know, and you'll come up out the other side, you know, in a much more healthy and happy state.
Mm. Well, I would like you to come up with a list of do's and don'ts for diets. Now, starting with the don'ts, I heard you saying that, well, if you are in a serious cancer situation, we are talking about raw vegan. Now, we did away with the sugar, the meat, the milk, and everything, and cooked food. Mm-hmm. And for raw vegan ingredients, I heard you said no celery because of the sodium. Mm-hmm. And what else? What are the no-nos?
Well, that's the big one. Well, I think pretty much that's it in the way of food. Because you just need to look at, you don't want a high sodium level and you don't want a high sugar level. However, if you're, a lot of people get the sugar situation incorrect. They think that if you're eating a lot of fruit, you're getting a lot of sugar.
Mm.
You're actually getting fructose in its natural form, which is pure energy. It's fuel for the cells. And it that's the best you can get. It's not sugar as we know, as we tend to think of sugar as being, you know, in a bad form. The body's cells actually need, I don't know if we could come up with a better word than sugar, but basically they need sugar in a form, in a natural form, to be able to continue to live and recuperate it. So getting it from plant-based is the best you can get. It's just basically, if we've eliminated everything other than fruits and vegetables, raw fruits and vegetables, I would suggest that people, rather than eliminating things, it's more about increasing it, because once you've got fruits and vegetables, you've got the best there is. Apart from celery, which is very high, if you have a diagnosis of cancer, then that is very high in sodium. The problem for most people is not once they've gone raw vegan, it's before that, everything's high in sodium.
Mm.
So they've already got that really, mm-hmm. you know, all prepared food, everything's mm-hmm. high.
Overloaded.
And also, you know, bad sugars as well, obviously, all kinds of processed foods. So if we've eliminated all the all those things, we're already, you know, and well on our way to having a really good, balanced, plant-based diet, then really celery is the only thing that I don't consume.
In terms of sodium in raw ingredients, the other culprit, I think, is tomatoes. Dried tomatoes carry a heavy dose of sodium.
Yes, tomatoes, they are, you know, quite high as well, but not to the extent that celery is. And with tomatoes and other savoury fruits, we don't consume that many of them. Really, we have the sweet fruits more, and then that's probably, you know, 90% of our diet, and then we might have a salad or a smoothie to get the greens, and then with the salad, it's, you know, we'll have a few tomatoes, but we grow our own, so getting tomatoes that are fully ripe, and that's another thing, is all of the plant-based foods must be ripe when you eat them. That's quite crucial. I mean, if you think of bananas, that's a classic example. Most people eat bananas before they're ripe. So not only are they not at their full 100% nutrient-laden state when you're eating them unripe, they can actually have a negative effect on you know, on the diet, because certain elements of that are in the fruits are there to basically to protect them from being eaten until they're fully, you know, if you think of it that way.
Chemical prohibitors.
Yes, exactly. So, especially in things like nuts and seeds, they're designed to grow another plant. And the nature provides this enzyme inhibitor that stops the seed or nut from growing it until it's in its perfect environment to do so. And so for us, if we eat them, especially nuts and seeds, if you're eating those raw, then you need to soak them first, because you need to soak out that enzyme inhibitor, which is quite toxic. It's designed that way so that we don't eat them that way. And there's also that in other foods and some toxic elements in some greens as well. So it's a matter of, like we don't eat very many nuts and seeds anyway, mostly, but it's a matter of making sure that whatever you're eating is in its ripe state. Getting back to the bananas, when you eat a banana, it should at least be speckled with spots, the little brown spots. That's the very least. Ours are usually almost brown all over when we eat them. And a lot of people go, oh, it tastes awful, you know. And so they're eating them green, and sometimes they're eating them so unripe that it makes your teeth turn inside out. Like, it gives you that that sort of strange texture in your mouth. That's because it's protecting you know, it's got that inhibitor to stop you from eating it. Like, it shouldn't be eaten at that stage, and that's actually at a toxic stage. So they must be eaten ripe. So fresh, ripe, preferably locally grown, and I know that's not always the case here, but as close, the least amount of fruit miles, we call it, you know, so it hasn't come from the US or somewhere way over there. You know, melons at the moment, in season, you know, they're being grown, what, in the just northern part of China. That's probably a pretty good a bet. And the other thing too is, if you can't get organic, then you're still better off to eat the fruit and vegetables than to not eat them, because they might have been sprayed or they're not organic. The other thing too is that certified organic doesn't necessarily mean that it's any more organic than some of the farmers' practices. So going to the farmers' market and asking them what their practices are, they may not have a certified organic certification, I should say, because it costs a lot of money. And anyway, their practices have probably been, you know, through the families, going back through the families, is perfectly natural. So just ask, and then you know. There's certain fruits and vegetables that are sprayed a lot more than others, and that kind of information is readily available online these days. You know, you just look it up, find out, you know, what's sprayed a lot, and then either don't eat them because there's plenty of other choices, or make sure that you're washing them, or there may be even other ways these days of eliminating that sort of thing. Getting back to the toxic load, one of the things that we haven't mentioned too much yet is one of the practices that I incorporated and still do on a daily basis when I can is to expose myself to infrared rays. So those are the beneficial rays of the sun, and back in, you know, the days before 50 years ago, most people were outside in the sun for a majority of the day, certainly early in the day and later in the day, you know, working in the garden or whatever, and were able to get enough sun. Over the last 50 years, of course, we've created this situation environmentally where it's not safe to do so in the middle of the day anyway, but we still have a practice of whenever we can, we expose ourselves to the sunshine first thing in the morning, so, you know, the hour after sunrise, and if we can, in the hour before sunset, where it's at a safer level to do so. The other way of getting that infrared ray is through infrared devices such as saunas, and there are infrared lamps as well, but be very careful to make sure that you get, you know, a legitimate manufacturing for those devices, that's all. Because that way, infrared is a vibrational light, and it creates a vibrational effect on the water molecules of the body, which is where the body stores these toxic elements and also fat. So it creates a vibrational effect which then releases those toxins a certain amount at a time back into the system, and you can release that through the natural process of elimination. But being very careful not to do too much too soon, because you may release too much into the body and then that will give you a toxic effect. So you just have to not override the body's intelligence, already stack that away to keep you safe. Mm-hmm. So it'll stack it right back again if you eliminate too much. But definitely infrared exposure is a good thing to do for lowering the toxic load.
Well, coming back to my question, what are, according to you, the most powerful and effective cancer resisting food?
Yeah. Okay, all the red, orange and yellow foods, fruits and vegetables, definitely. And also all the cruciferous vegetables, particularly for breast cancer. So they have a component in them called indole carbonyl-3, which is specific to lowering the estrogen level in the body. So, which is, you know, helps the, not helps, but it increases the amount of the body's cancer cells to increase. So if you can get as many cruciferous vegetables, which are cabbage,
cauliflower,
Brussels sprouts, any of those types, then they're really helpful for that. Greens, especially all leafy green vegetables, and the most natural form the better. So rather than having the types of leafy greens that are more hybrids, go to the more natural ones that grow naturally, especially around here, that what you would find naturally in the jungle or in the, you know, in the countryside are very good.
For this part of the world, my number one choice is, of course, sweet potato leaves.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
It's cheap and it's pesticide-free.
Yeah, and also easy to grow.
Ah,
you know,
around the year.
Yeah, I mean, you can grow. We even used to, that brings back memories of, we used to have sweet potatoes to eat, you know, cooked obviously, but afterwards, my mother always cut the tops off them, and we as children would put them into a little jar of water.
Yeah.
And those greens would grow all around the house.
Wow.
Like, they would just grow everywhere, you know. It was just one of those things that was kind of a fun thing to do. And then my mum would cut some off and then put them in a salad or whatever. And then they would grow more. And this is all just from the from the top. Mm. So, you know, they're easily grown. So definitely green leafy vegetables are a must to have. I think there are some schools of thought where some fruitarians and people that we know very well have been fruitarians for many, many years, and they only have fruits. They don't even have any greens at all. But I feel, you know, depending on where you're living, and especially in Hong Kong and China, you need to look towards getting a wider variety of fruits and vegetables to be sure to get the nutrients you need. So definitely including the greens. And in case anybody's wondering where we get our protein, that's a classic question. Not quite sure why you need to keep thinking about how much protein you get, but that's all in the greens. So make sure that you're getting and a wide variety of greens too is better than just sticking to one type. So the green smoothies are the best way to get it, because you're going to get more in there, easier to digest because it's pre-digested by the blender. But also make sure that you're consuming it as soon as it's been made, so it's not, you know, oxidizing too. Especially same with juicing too, so having it as soon as you've made it.
I understand that one of your favorites is the beetroot.
Yes.
And then do you do wheatgrass juicing?
Yes, so two things there. The beetroot, yes. I always have beetroot every day in some form or another, mostly in juicing. So we juice carrots, beetroot, and the greens, the stalks from the greens that we've used in either in salads or green smoothies. So the beetroot is a blood builder. So it's basically going straight into your blood and helping, you know, taking the blood then takes those nutrients throughout the body, which is exactly what you need. Or we will grate it, you know, into a salad, something like that. So we have beetroot every day. Wheatgrass was the other part of the question. Absolutely. If you can, it's relatively simple to grow wheatgrass. There are a few little tricks and tips that I could share, but apart from those few things, it's quite easy to grow yourself, but you must juice it. So you can't just eat the grass because of the cellulose level in the grass, and we're not ruminants, so we can't actually process the grass very well. And therefore you would end up with it sort of, you know, in your organs where it's not digested properly. So juicing the grass is the best. Now, if you're in a situation out where I'm looking right now in the countryside where you've got grass growing that is not being polluted, ordinary everyday grass, preferably grass that grows naturally rather than that has been sown as a lawn, you can go and cut that and juice that, and it's just as good if not better than wheatgrass itself, because it has that a bitter astringent in it, and it's like having, you know, it's having the pure thing. It's straight up protein as well. If you're still concerned about protein, the best protein you can get is from grass. Now, if you think about where do you get your protein? If you're thinking that you're getting protein from animals, where did they get it from? You think about what they eat. They eat grass, or they eat greens. And we're basically, if we can get it from the greens, we don't have to pass it through the cow first, so to speak. So you're getting it straight up. So definitely we do wheatgrass when we're at home and we're able to grow it, but mostly we just use natural grasses. And when we had our wellness center in Canada, we created a wheatgrass what would you call it? We were producing about 200 trays a day. So people had never even heard of it in those days, and we really were able to tell people about what a wonderful thing it is, to a great way to get you know, all your nutrients and all your protein you'll ever need, more than you'll ever need.
Well, I'm so happy to hear your view about the wild grass, and
yes.
I happen to agree totally. Well, for one thing, Hong Kong, in terms of climate, is not exactly good for wheatgrass. It's
yes.
from a temperate
yes.
you know, climate,
yeah.
and Hong Kong is subtropical. So
yeah.
people will find less than convenient.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you get molds and whatnot.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And to me, yes, I think the wild grass, the grass in the wild, is much more nutritious
mm-hmm.
because of the soil,
yeah.
and because of the sunlight, and because of many other things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we practice is we follow the dogs. The dogs choose certain
mm-hmm.
kinds of grass.
Yep.
Not all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
You can follow the cows.
Yes, exactly.
Our cattle is choosy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh,
right.
You follow them.
Yeah, they know without having gone to university what to choose.
Mm-hmm. Our cattle knows in what season what to pick up.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, but again, in a place like Hong Kong, this is luxury because
mm-hmm.
if you are in the urban area, everything is covered with toxic chemicals
mm-hmm.
because of the vehicles.
Another reason, I mean, that's another reason for taking time out. Like, take the time to, you know, if you only get a certain, you know, one day a week or whatever, to be able to do this, however often you can do it, go out into the countryside, get up into the new territories and go for a hike and get yourself some grass. I mean, it's, you know, it comes back to that, are you worth it? Like, why would you continue to stay in a situation that is not beneficial to you? You need to at least, you know, if you're not going to move out of the city, then get out of it once a week, or even if it's only, you know, once every fortnight, and go out there, breathe the air, you know, the cleaner air, and get some greens. It's really, it's simple, it's easy, and it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Now time for a little break, and afterwards, I will be talking about the raw movement in different parts of the world.